तस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकया चक्षुरोन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। नमो विष्णुपादाय कृष्णप्रेष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्तस्वामिनिति नामिने। नमस्ते सारस्वतीदेवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेषा शून्यवादी पाशातिदशतारिणे। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाता श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृंद। हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे हरे, हरे राम 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 हरे हरे। We are continuing the 26th chapter. King Puranjan goes to the forest to hunt. Let it. So text number 14. अन्तःपुरस्त्रियो पृच्छद् विमणा इव वेदिषत् अपि वः कुशलं रामा शेश्वरीणां यथा पुरा। So far So Narada Muni started describing the story of King Puranjan. It is an allegorical story in order to actually preach to King Prachina Barishad. So in this story, of course, Narada Muni first, when Prachina Barishad approached Narada Muni, initially Narada Muni gave the vision of the animals which were killed by Prachina Barishad, how those animals were devouring to actually attack Prachina Barishad once he dies. And then by giving that vision, he made him actually little fearful, so that he develops the urge to actually hear from him. So his holiness Radhana Swami Maharaj explained that initially a person approaches a sadhu, or initially a person approaches religion out of fear. So Narada Muni initially made him little fearful, and by that he is creating a hunger in him to hear from him. So from that initial stage of approaching him with fear, finally Narada Muni will take him to that stage where he will actually approach the Lord with love. So that will be the culmination of his preaching. So then when Narada Muni starts preaching to Prachina Barishad, he speaks this allegorical story of Puranjan. It is not some real story. There was no king called as Puranjan, but he is telling this story, and through this story he is indirectly telling his own life story. Because as Prabhupada explains that kings, those who are influential and those who are highly powerful like kings, they don't like to hear directly that they are doing something wrong, that they are fools, they are committing mistakes, they are going in the wrong direction. So therefore Narada Muni indirectly he is telling the story, and through that story he is actually trying to instruct him. Just like once one devotee went to, he was supposed to undergo a surgery. So he went for the surgery, and then the doctors initially they came to actually administer the anesthesia. And then they administered the anesthesia, and then after some time he woke up. And then again he saw the doctors, and then he asked the doctors, so when are you going to perform the surgery? So the doctor said, actually surgery is already over. So the devotee was mentioning that actually, like they performed the surgery in such a way that the person actually did not come to know the surgery has been performed. So that is what Narada Muni is trying to do. And Narada Muni is trying to perform the surgery of removing his false ego, but in such a way that that he is not feeling the pain. That Prachinamarid is not feeling the pain so much. That's why he's telling the story of allegorical story. And generally, and why Narada Muni has chosen this allegorical story is that generally kings like to hear about other kings. So therefore Narada Muni has chosen this particular story. And also it is like a very nice story filled with so many nice events, and by that a person can immediately become captivated to hearing something. Like when we tell some simple stories and say jokes or something, like people like to hear, and through that when we give the message, then the message goes deeply, or people are ready to accept that message, then if we directly give the message. So Narada Muni is telling this story. And also Narada Muni has chosen this story because this story is also very much relevant in the sense that Prachina Parishad is involved in Karma Kanda animal sacrifices. And this story also is spoken in such a way that in this story also involves how Paranjan goes to actually hunt, and then he was very much attached to his dharmic way of life. And Narada Muni is telling the story so that King Prachina Parishad, who is attached to his so-called religious sacrifices, he will actually come to the real understanding that the goal of life is not to simply perform these duties or simply perform these karmakanda sacrifices and go to heavenly planets and come back, but the goal of life is actually to go beyond this religion under the three modes, but to actually come to the ultimate point of transcendental religion. So because in the story also King Puranjan was in one sense attached to enjoying in a religious way, and King Prachina Parishad was also actually a religious king. So if you see from one point of view, from the point of view of a pure devotee, Prachina Parishad was a very fallen. But from the point of view of a Kali Yuga person, Prachina Parishad is like a saint. Because at least he is following a religious way of life. He's trying to perform karmakanda sacrifice according to the Vedic conduct. But of course in that, as Prabhupada explains, that because he was performing so many animal sacrifices, There are many mistakes and different sacrifices. So because of that, many animals were killed, and they did not get the proper, they did not get an elevation in their life. So because of that, these animals were also waiting to actually devour Prachina Parishad. So that is also mentioned. So he started telling this story of Puranjan. So this King Puranjan, he had traveled to different places, and he did not find a suitable place to reside. And then, because he was feeling insufficiency everywhere, then ultimately he returns to the southern side of the Himalayas, and this place is known as Bharatvarsha. And then when he comes to Bharatvarsha, this place is called as the city of nine gates. And Narada Muni gives a description of this particular place, how the city was filled with so many facilities, and it is filled with so many gardens and waterfalls, nice chirping birds, etc. And then when he enters the city of nine gates, he finds a beautiful woman, and who was actually surrounded by so many maid servants and different assistants. And this king Puranjan becomes attracted to this particular beautiful lady. And after seeing that lady, and then he comes to talk to that lady, and then he asks that lady about her identity and about the assistants who are actually there along with that lady. And then he asks different questions that, are you actually the wife of Lord Shiva, Bhavani, or are you Saraswati, or are you goddess of fortune, Lakshmi Devi? And then finally comes to the conclusion that she cannot be any of these personalities, because usually all these heavenly personalities, they do not actually put their feet on the ground. And then, having come to the conclusion she is not the wife of somebody, she is not a goddess of fortune or someone, then finally he proposes to her that, why don't you actually accept me as the husband? And then this lady, so in this story, this lady actually represents the material intelligence. And this lady starts speaking to Puranjan, and she starts telling her identity, and she starts telling the telling about her assistance. In fact, what she says is that, actually, I do not know. Does anybody remember, like, what she says? I do not know my father and mother. So Prabhupada writes, this is the nature of a living entity in this material world who does not know the origin of his life. And then this lady actually glorifies the Grihastha Ashram. She says that Grihastha Ashram is suitable for enjoying sense gratification, and also one can actually one can attain liberation at the end. And then she criticizes the transcendentalists or sannyasis, and they do not know, they are actually inexperienced, they do not know, because they give up this Grihastha Ashram in which a person can enjoy sense gratification. And then she glorifies Grihastha Ashram, and then she actually accepts Puranjan as her husband. And then Narada Muni describes that how King Puranjan and this lady started enjoying the city of Nine Gates. And after giving that description, then he describes the what are the nine gates in this city, and how this Puranjan, along with his wife, goes through the different nine gates to different destinations. So nine gates are the different holes in the body. Through those nine gates, he goes to enjoy different sense objects, along with different friends. Those friends represent, I think, the devatas who are in charge of the senses. And then this the previous chapter concludes with how this King Puranjan completely comes under the influence of the material intelligence. So whatever wherever the lady would walk, he would also walk. Whatever she would speak, she would also speak. So because the lady represents the material intelligence, this shows that how the living entity comes completely under the control of the material intelligence. That is how the 25th chapter ends. And the 26th chapter begins with how this Puranjan goes to forest for hunting. The chariot, he goes to the forest for hunting with the help of a chariot. And this chariot is, there is a detailed description of the horses and the shaft and the arrows used by Puranjan, and the axle, the chariot driver. The chariot actually represents a material body. The different parts of the chariot represent the different parts of the material body. So this Puranjan goes to hunt. So that means the living entity, leaving the dharmic way of life, he wants to enjoy sense gratification without following religion. He wants to enjoy more women. He wants to enjoy intoxication, illicit sex, like that. So Prabhupada compares like that. So then King Puranjan took great pride to hunt, and he killed many animals in the forest. And after killing so many animals, he became tired, and then he again comes back to his house. So the Puranjan coming back to his house to meet his wife. So it represents how the living entity sometimes he indulges in sinful activities, and after some time he comes to his senses, and then again he returns to the dharmic way of life, and then he starts repenting for the mistakes. He again starts repenting for the mistakes. So then when he comes back, he actually he is looking for the wife. So we are reading this particular section. When he comes back to his home, he is looking for his wife, and King Puranjan starts questioning the different attendants of his wife about the whereabouts of his wife. So verse number 14 to 16, in these three verses, Puranjan questions the assistants of his wife about his wife. So my dear beautiful women, are you and your mistress all very happy like before or not? So here Prabhupada explains that when a man becomes refreshed by the association with the devotees and awakens to Krishna consciousness, he consults the activities of his mind, namely thinking, feeling and willing, and decides whether he should return to his material activities or stay steady in spiritual consciousness. So we see in these purports, like Prabhupada gives different lessons on Vedic culture, different aspects of the psychology of the man and the woman, and he also explains what these different characters mentioned in the story, what they actually represent on a spiritual platform. Like what is the just like Puranjan represents a living entity, this lady represents a material intelligence, coming back to pacify his, looking for his wife and pacifying his wife. It represents how the living entity sometimes repents for his sinful activities. So Prabhupada gives, from the direct storyline, he gives actually lessons based on Vedic culture. And then when he translates the storyline, and he gives lessons, lessons for our spiritual life, about material intelligence, spiritual intelligence, worshipping the spiritual master, so like that. So this is how actually Prabhupada's purports are like intermingled with like both these kinds of messages. So one thing we can see when we compare Srila Prabhupada's purport to the previous acharyas, the Vishnu Chakravarti's purports, he just mentions what this particular event in the story, what it means in our spiritual meaning, what the spiritual meaning of this. So he doesn't go into the detail of the Vedic culture. Like he doesn't, like many times we see how the man Puranjan becomes attracted to this lady. So Prabhupada talks about the attraction between a man and a woman, and so many things he talks about, but we don't find such kind of description in Vishnu Chakravarti's purports, because we see that like when those acharyas are writing purports, like people already had like a good training in the culture, and they did not need to actually hear these things. So just Vishnu Chakravarti was concentrating only about the spiritual meaning of those events. But Prabhupada is dealing with a different audience, so Prabhupada had to educate people. Prabhupada is using the story to educate people about the different responsibilities of a husband and the responsibilities of a wife, and how the household life should be led. So Prabhupada is also giving purpose. That's actually not in the compassion of Srila Prabhupada. And another thing we can see is that, like when Narada Muni is narrating this story, we can see like how the acharyas are like more and more compassionate. When Narada Muni is narrating this story, he tells the meaning of this allegorical story actually in the 29th chapter. After hearing the whole allegorical story in the 29th chapter, Prachina Parishat asks, can you please tell the meaning of the story? I have not understood the meaning of the story. Then Narada Muni tells what all different characters represent in the story. So Narada Muni tells the meaning of the story in the 29th chapter. But the acharyas, they actually go ahead. They go ahead and then they give that meaning which Narada Muni explains later, much before. So that is actually the compassion of Srila Prabhupada. That how he actually goes ahead of the verses. He goes and then he gives the purports which are supposed to be, which are given by the Narada Muni later. He gives those purports right from the beginning. So here Prabhupada explains that so this King Puranjan is consulting with his different with the household women. So Prabhupada explains that one should actually consult one's mind. A sane man should consult his mind, its thinking, feeling and willing processes, and decide how these processes should be utilized. So these are the three functions of the mind: thinking, feeling and willing. One should think that how I can think of Krishna, how I can, what sort of feelings I should have, how I should actually, what all desires I should develop for serving the Lord. So when one is engaged in activities other than Vishnu Bhakti, or in other words, when one is engaged in material activities, he is always filled with anxieties. Then the thinking, feeling and willing are on the material platform. But when a person comes to Krishna consciousness, the thinking, feeling, feeling, yala, thinking, feeling and willing are in the, are related to Krishna. So then Prabhupada explains that in the case of a material mind, the material mind will give thoughts about sense gratification, feeling, it will give desires of sense gratification. But when a person becomes advanced in Krishna consciousness, then he does not derive happiness from material activities. So then Prabhupada concludes the purport by quoting this Vishaya Vinivartanti, how when a person develops a higher taste, then the lower desires go. Next verse. Na tataitar hi rochante griheshu griha sampadah yadi nasyad grihe mata patni va pati devata vyange ratayiva pragya konama sita dinavat.
King Puranjana said, I do not understand why my household paraphernalia does not attract me as before. I think that if there is neither a mother nor devoted wife at home, the home is like a chariot without wheels. Where is the fool who will sit down on such an unworkable chariot?
So, just one more point regarding thinking, feeling and willing, which Prabhupada mentioned in the previous purport, that a sane man should always consult his mind with his thinking, feeling and willing. So when, especially with respect to chanting, or we can say with respect to, in general, with respect to other devotional activities also, like what should be our thinking, feeling and willing? Which Rupa Goswami explains in the Upadesha Amrit, Syat Krishna Nama Charita Adi Sitapya Vidya Pittopatapta Rasanasya Na Rochikanu Kintvadarat Anudinam Kalusaiva Jushta Swadvi Kramad Bhavati Tad Gada Moolahantri. So what should be our thinking? We should think that the name, form, qualities and pastimes of the Supreme Lord, they are transcendental by nature. And we should feel, although the Supreme Lord's name is transcendental, although the holy name of the Lord is actually non-different from Him, but we should feel that, oh, I am so fallen that I do not have a taste for chanting these holy names. I do not find this chanting or devotional processes to be pleasurable. So this should be our feeling. And what should be our willing? Kin twadarad anudinam kalu saiva jushta. Although I do not have a taste, but I will chant my prescribed number of rounds. I will execute my duties in Krishna consciousness every day without fail. With the faith that on one day my disease of ignorance will be removed, and then I will be able to experience the taste in these activities. So this is thinking about the nature of Krishna's holy names, and feeling that we do not have a taste, and willing that although I do not have a taste, but I will chant every day. So this should be our thinking, feeling and willing with respect to our devotional activities. So now Puranjan says that I do not find my household paraphernalia attractive to me as it was before. So he mentions, when there is neither a devoted wife nor a affectionate mother at home, then the house is not pleasurable. House is like a chariot without wheels. And what is the use of an unbroken chariot which does not have wheels? So this is a very beautiful purpose, beautiful point. So here the wife and the mother. The mother represents bhakti and the wife represents dharma. That means without bhakti and dharma, without taking to devotional service and without leading a religious life, then this life is of no use. It will actually, will only have a wrong destination. You will not actually make any progress. So the real mother is devotional service to the Lord, and the real patni is our devoted wife is a wife who helps her husband execute religious principles in devotional service. And these two things are required for a happy home. That is a good affectionate mother and a religious wife. And then Prabhupada explains how Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had both an affectionate mother and a wife who is actually none other than the goddess of fortune. But still he actually left home for the sake of preaching Krishna consciousness. So Prabhupada says that when there is an affectionate mother and a religious chaste wife, then there is no need to even leave home. There is no need of taking sannyas. Unless it is absolutely necessary, as it was for Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So here, if we see, it's mother and wife. That means bhakti and dharma. So Prabhupada will just try to focus on this point. Bhakti and dharma. So that means we have to practice devotional service. Devotional service is the dharma of the soul. It is our swarupa dharma. It is our dharma of the soul. Swarupa. And leading a religious life means that performing our duties according to varna and ashram. According to leading a dharmic life. So both are required. So there are two kinds of swadharma. One is the swadharma on the platform of the soul, that is bhakti. And swadharma on the platform of the body is that varnashram dharma. So that means like the mother and the wife, that means like what is emphasized, like one should perform bhakti, swadharma of the soul, along with the practice of our varnashram dharma. So if we see that when Krishna explains in the Gita, karma naivahi samsiddhim astito janakadaya loka sangraham evapi sampashyan kartumargasi. And many great personalities like Janak Maharaj, he also performed the duties just for the sake of setting example for others. So if we see these three characters, Bhishma, Duryodhan and Arjun are the Pandavas. In the case of Duryodhan, he performed his swadharma only for the sake of his selfish interest. For his extreme selfish interest, he performed swadharma. So that led to battle, sangrama. That led to sangrama. And Bhishma De, he actually, in one sense, he gave up his swadharma, in the sense that he refused to become the king. Or in another sense, although he did not become the king, he also did not take sannyas. He was like a saint among the politicians. He didn't become the king, then he should have joined, maybe taken sannyas, or he should have lived in an ashram. But he didn't take sannyas. At the same time, he was living in the palace, but he did not become the king. So what Bhishma they did was, he engaged Swadharma in the service of Duryodhana. So Bhishma Dev was extremely selfless. He was extremely selfless, but he used that selflessness in the service of the selfishness of Duryodhana. Are you getting that point? So he engaged that selflessness in the service of the selfish Duryodhana. So what it led to? It led to a great struggle in his life. Sangarsha. But the Pandavas or Arjuna, he wanted to give up his swadharma of fighting for the sake of compassion. For the sake of compassion. But Krishna spoke Gita in order to actually inspire him to actually perform his swadharma. So Duryodhan performing his swadharma for his selfish interest led to battle. Bhishma Dev giving up his swadharma, although for a selfless reason, it led to actually confusion. It led to great struggle. It led to great struggle in his life. And Arjuna, the Pandavas, they performed their swadharma. And that led to loka sangraha. That led to the benefit of the society, or that actually united the society. So when we talk about swadharma, not only we have to perform swadharma on the platform of the soul, but we also have to perform swadharma on the platform of the body. Means we have to perform varnashram dharma. Because the reason is that when we don't perform actually swadharma on the platform of the body, on a physical level, mental level, like what will happen is that it will lead to certain struggle, it will lead to actually certain suffering. And then, unconsciously, when the suffering comes, unconsciously, we will start performing devotional service in order to get relief from the suffering. Goindra was mentioning this point a few days back, that like in the case of Bhishma Dev, he underwent so much of struggle, but he never actually... he never took shelter of Krishna in order to actually get freedom from that struggle. He took shelter of Krishna only for the sake of loving Krishna. But in our, that's why he is a Mahajan. But in our case, when people don't perform their swadharma, when they perform swadharma only on the platform of the soul, that means like when they are taking to devotional service, when they don't perform swadharma on the platform of the body, then what happens? Then that leads to certain struggle. And then unconsciously they start using devotional service for getting relief from that struggle, for getting relief from that suffering. That means it does not become pure devotional service. So therefore, it is important that there has to be coherency. That means like we have to perform swadharma on the platform of the soul, and we have to perform swadharma on the platform of the body, and with the platform of the mind or intelligence, and all on level, on all levels, then there has to be coherency. So whenever we perform, that means like when we perform swadharma, it will lead to loka sangraha. It will lead to unity of the society. It will lead to benefit of the society. And if the society is benefited, then we will be able to go deeper into our swadharma. And when you go deeper into swadharma, then society will be more benefited. And then society will be more benefited, then we can go further, go deeper into our Swadharma. So therefore, this Swadharma and Loka Sangraha, they are actually related. When we perform our Swadharma, it leads to Loka Sangraha. It leads to unity of the society. It leads to a proper example. It leads to benefit of the society. And when we don't perform our Swadharma, even when we performing devotional service, but then if he does not perform Swadharma on the bodily platform, although we are practicing devotional service, because we are not practicing Swadharma on the bodily platform, it will lead to certain disturbance to the society. So therefore, there has to be coherency between the Swadharma and the platform of the soul and the body and the mind, intelligence, everything. So the Swadharma and the platform of the soul is bhakti. And Swadharma on the bodily platform is actually dharma. So that is what it is mentioned, that these two things are required for a happy home. That means affectionate mother and a religious wife. These two things are required for a happy home. So what does it mean? Dharma, that means Swadharma on the platform of the body, and Swadharma on the platform of the soul, bhakti, both are required for a happy home. When we perform only Swadharma on either of these things, it will not lead to complete happiness. So what happened to Bhishma Dev was that in Bhishma Dev there was no coherency. He gave his heart for Krishna, but he gave his body for Duryodhana. He used his body for the service of Duryodhana, but he gave his heart for Krishna. Means like, in his heart he was performing Swadharma, he was performing bhakti for pleasure of Krishna, but his body was engaged in the service of a adharmic person, Duryodhana. So therefore, there was no coherency. So that led to actually a lot of struggle in his life. So if you have to have a happy home, in the sense, perform our Swadharma on the body and the platform of the soul also. Both. That's what Prabhupada explains in this purport.
As you told, Vishnudeva did not become sannyasi and did not become king. So one of his purport, and in Shastra also it is said that everyone should choose either of one the ashram, either he should marry or become grahastha, otherwise he should take sannyas, renounced. So those who are not marrying are just like living in lifelong, not going to brahmacharya ashram, not going to grahastha ashram, they are dangerous, like this they are saying in Shastra also. So how Bhishma Dev is a Mahajan, he did not stay under a spiritual master or became brahmacharya ashram,
he chose not
both of these.
That is the only example in the Shastra. It's the only example in the Shastra in the sense. Bhishma Dev is called as a Mahajan. That is definitely nonsense in the sense that from one point of view, we say it's a mistake in the sense that he actually he didn't become the king. At the same time, he did not take sannyas. But we are following Bhishma Dev is a Mahajan because he was completely surrendered to the Lord. He gave his heart for Krishna. So for that sake, he was called as a Mahajan. So from Varnashram point of view, he was definitely, from that point of view, we are not saying he is a Mahajan. But he is a Mahajan because he was completely surrendered to the Lord. He understood this. Prabhupada writes, both purports are there in the Bhagavatam. Prabhupada mentions that Bhishma Dev understood the will of the Lord, that Krishna wanted to teach a lesson that even if a very powerful person like Bhishma Dev, if he is on the side of the adharma, then adharma will not actually, adharma cannot win. So Krishna wanted to teach that lesson. So Bhishma Dev wanted to, he actually agreed to the instrument of Krishna at the cost of being criticized for the rest of the eternity. From that point of view, he surrendered to the will of the Lord. So that is why he is called as a Mahajan. But Prabhupada also writes another purport that we should also take lesson. Even if somebody is such a very powerful devotee like Bhishma Dev, if he takes the side of adharma, he will get reaction. He cannot actually, he will not be protected. So sometimes, so we can take this lesson in our life in the sense that, like, sometimes we see devotees, they go through certain difficulties, like they go through, like for example, one devotee was preparing for some medical entrance, and then he studied hard and he was very sincere devotee, but then he didn't get through the entrance. And but then he became so morose and he approached another devotee and said that, why did Krishna do this to me? Like, in the sense, I didn't get selected. Like similar other many times people say, why I'm getting this suffering? But if we see from this point of view of Bhishmadev was a devotee, but he was working on the side of adharma, so therefore he was not protected, he was destroyed. So if we see our own lifestyle, like for example, if a person is a doctor or something, in the case of the student who is preparing for medical entrance, if you see the whole, the allopathic profession, it is actually in one sense indirectly related to cow killing also. It is directly related to actually adharma also. You see, the most of the pharmaceutical industry, it is very much connected to the slaughtering of the animals and slaughtering of the cows. Medicines are manufactured. That means, like, indirectly we are supporting adharma. So we have to take lesson. Although we are practicing devotional service, but our lifestyle is indirectly supporting adharma. So then we cannot expect protection from Krishna. Just like Bhishmadev was also not protected because of supporting adharma. So we can take both lessons. So in the sense, so that is in one sense a wrong example. It's neither situated here nor situated there. But of course we must know, like in our life, as far as possible in our life, we should try to be situated properly. But you will see as time progresses in Kali Yuga, there will be many people like that. So, but we have to somehow just encourage them to just practice devotional service. We have to encourage them to people to be situated properly in ashram. But you'll find certain people who will neither get married nor they will want to join ashram. And as time progresses, more and more people will be there. So we cannot sometimes just speak very heavily in the sense that, you have no hope. But we have to somehow encourage them to practice devotional service. At the same time, we also educate in general people about the importance of practicing Varnashram Dharma in order to have stability in devotional service. And another beautiful point, because here Prabhupada mentions this point, which will come later also, but I'll just... Here Prabhupada explains that a woman is supposed to be the energy of the man, and historically in the background of every great man there is either a mother or a wife. In the background of every great man there is either a mother or a wife. So if we see the Vedic model and the Western model with respect to the roles of women, is that Bhaktitirtha Maharaj, he mentions in a different context, he mentions one beautiful point about a good leader and a great leader. Good leaders are those people who actually do extraordinary things on their own, like who do extraordinary things personally. But great leaders are those people who inspire others to do extraordinary things. Just like, for example, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he, through Ramananda Rai, he spoke about the deepest confidential secrets of Madhurya Ras. And through Rupa Goswami, he spoke what Sambandha Jnana, Abhideya Jnana, Prayojana. And through Haridas Thakur, he spoke the glories of the holy name. And through Srila Prabhupada, he spread the He spread that holy name to the whole world. So great leaders are those who actually inspire others to be, to extraordinary things. See, a great leader is actually, such a person is actually greater than a good leader who only does things on his own. So in the Western model for women is that, in the Western model, they tell women to become leaders. But the Vedic model for women is that the women should actually create leaders. Women should actually inspire their husbands to become great leaders. And women should actually inspire their children to become great leaders, especially their sons to become great leaders. So this Vedic model for women, this is actually superior to the Western model. Because a great leader, who a person who inspires many others to become leaders, such a leader, such a person is actually superior to a person who does things on his own. So people criticize the Vedic model for women, so primitive, etc. But actually this is superior to the Western model. And secondly, in the Western model for women, there is a great risk for women to get exploited. When they try to become leaders, then they tend to, because of free mixing, they tend to get exploited. But in the Vedic model for women, not only they are actually superior, because they are actually great leaders, but there is a proper protection for their, for them from the husbands or from the sons. And yeah, there is something I want to mention about it. We'll go to the next verse. Kva vartate sa lalana majyantam yasanarnave Yamam uddharate pragyam deepayanti pade pade.
Kindly let me know the whereabouts of that beautiful woman who always saves me when I am drowning in the ocean of danger. By giving me good intelligence at every step, she always saves me.
So he is asking about the whereabouts of the beautiful women. I'm actually drowning in the ocean of danger. Give me the intelligence at every step, because she always saves me. So Prabhupada says that a good wife is actually, there is no difference between a good wife and a good intelligence. And then he talks, because Puranjan is saying that I'm drowning in the ocean of danger. So Prabhupada says that this material world is actually, there is a danger at every step. As I was hearing one class of one devotee, he was mentioning that it is not that there is danger in samsara. Samsara means material existence. Actually, one must know that the samsara itself is danger. That's what padam padam yad vipadam. So good intelligence means becoming Krishna conscious. So Krishna ye bhaje se bada chatur. And then Prabhupada explains that a real wife is called as Dharma Patni. And the children who are begotten through Dharma Patni, only they have the authority to actually inherit the property of the father. And the children who are not, who are born of a woman who is not properly married, they cannot inherit the father's property. And then Prabhupada explains that what is the definition of a chaste wife? Chaste wife is one who never had any connection with men before her marriage. And then he explains that when a woman has opportunity to mix freely with men, for such a woman to become a chaste wife is actually very difficult in Kali Yuga. It's very difficult for her to maintain her chastity. And then he concludes the purport by saying that how a chaste wife accepted to the religious marriage ritual can be of great help when one is threatened by many dangerous situations in life. So now the assistants of this queen, they reply to Puranjan. Rama vuchuhu naranatana jani mas tatpriya yadvyavasyati bhutale niravastare Shayanam Pashya Shatruhan.
All the women address the king.
O master of the citizens, we do not know why your dear wife has taken on this sort of existence. O killer of enemies, kindly look. She is lying on the ground without bedding. We cannot understand why she is acting this way.
So, the wife of Puranjan was actually lying on the floor without any bedding. So, these assistants are actually informing that to the King Puranjan. So here, again, Prabhupada explains about the nature of materialistic man and the devotees towards the wife. So materialistic men, they see the women only as objects of sense gratification. But a devotee does not see like that. A devotee sees that a person does not have a chaste wife accepted by religious principles always has a bewildered intelligence. So how a devotee sees a woman as actually as a mother, except for the wife. He doesn't see simply as an object for sense gratification. So if we see, especially in Kali Yuga, the whole propaganda is made in such a way that they make women as mainly objects of sense gratification. So because of that, like what is happening is that women are not inclined to perform the role of a mother. If it is the role of a mother or a housewife, they are not seen to performing extraordinary things openly. Like when there is a great leader who simply inspires others to perform extraordinary things, he may not be seen to perform extraordinary things. But he is the inspiration behind others who are performing extraordinary things. So that is, in that sense, mother or a wife is actually the role of a housewife or a mother is actually so superior. So people are not inclined to perform these roles because of being affected by the Western propaganda. And if you go to any school and if you ask the girls in the school, like, what do you want to become? Like, nobody would say that I want to become a mother or a housewife. They would say that I want to become a doctor or engineer or collector. If somebody says, I want to be a housewife, and such people are actually looked down by saying, oh, why are you so primitive? Why don't you do something? Like, they are actually, as if such people are actually worthless. Like, the propaganda is made in such a way. So because of that, these roles which are so divine, especially the role of a mother, which is so divine, and people are not inclined to actually play these roles. So we have to, in one sense, we have to educate people about the sanctity and the divine nature of these roles. How these roles are actually superior to the roles in which when a person is directly acting as a leader. Of course, we have instances in the Vedic culture that in the case of emergency, sometimes women also take up, like, there is an apad dharma that is also there, in the sense, like Jhansi Rani became a queen or something like that. But that is in the case of emergency. But what is a normal role is actually the mother and a wife. To create leaders and not to become leader. So that is the normal role of a woman. So Prabhupada explains here that when there is no chaste wife, when a man does not have a chaste wife, then it leads to bewilderment of intelligence. And then Prabhupada talks about the proper relation between the husband and wife. Wife must the proper relation is that a woman must always be protected by her husband. We always speak of the goddess of fortune as being placed in the chest of Narayan. thus she becomes beloved and well protected. Just as one saves his money and places it under his own personal protection, one will similarly protect his wife by his own personal supervision. So the Prabhupada is trying to say that one should not neglect the husband, should not neglect the wife. So on a spiritual level, what it means is that one should not actually, one should take care of one's intelligence. One should actually, one should spiritualize one's intelligence. One should not neglect one's intelligence in that sense. And then Prabhupada explained that how the husband and wife should live together. That is because, I said the wife is called as Ardhangini. So now from the 18th to 20th verse, these three verses describe Puranjan's reaction on seeing her wife who was actually lying down on the floor.
The stri is called like, it is, the term stri is like expansion.
Yeah, one who expands.
Once a person is married, so his material life expands. So how to understand that the woman help one to rise in the spiritual platform? Rather, we also find actually when people get married, they are more over materially inclined rather than following some spiritual path. They are committed, but not to that extent. How to understand?
Like the sense that when a man, because every living entity who has come to this world, he wants sense gratification. Like Prabhupada explains that the woman helps the husband to enjoy sense gratification in a religious manner. So that he does not have to perform sinful activities outside the marriage. In that sense, she helps. And the chaste wife, she can assist the husband in, if the husband is religious, if he is performing devotional service, the wife can actually assist the husband in the religious activities. And she, if you remember in that Kashyapa Muni, and Kashyapa Muni is speaking to Diti, he says that the other three ashramas apart from the Grahastha ashram, they are dangerous in the sense that there is no commander in chief. There is no commander for protecting the ashram. But in the Grahastha ashram, there is a commander is there, so therefore one can easily get protected from the enemies, like that he mentions. In other, suppose when a person becomes too much inclined towards sense gratification, because there is no facility to, in the other three ashram, there is no question of actually having sex life in the Brahmachari ashram or the Vanaprasa Sannyasa ashram. If a person has to enjoy, then he will have to become irreligious. In that sense, that actually the other three ashrams are, there is a danger. So, because the wife actually assists the husband in that, by giving that facility to enjoy in a religious manner, so in that sense, it's explained. Grahastha ashram is superior. And of course, in Kali Yuga, see, the ideal situation is something. Ideal situation is like, the man should be religious, he should engage in devotional service, and the wife should actually assist the man. But when a man, when he becomes inclined towards sense gratification, when he becomes attached towards the wife, then it becomes actually the worst situation. And that is the situation mostly in Kali Yuga. Because there is no training. One of the main reasons is that there is neither training for the man, and there is neither training for the women. When there is a proper training, they understand the responsibility of the roles. And without the training, when they enter, then they become the man becomes attached to the wife. So then it doesn't make much progress. Next verse. So here, so King Puranjan is actually repenting for actually neglecting the wife and going to perform hunting in the forest. So here it is explained, Nirikshya Avadutam Bhuvi. Avadutam means this wife of Puranjan was lying like a mendicant without taking care of her body. And on seeing that, King Puranjan starts repenting. And he is feeling that, oh, what does it mean in our sense that a person starts repenting, oh, I neglected my good intelligence and I gave in to my, I came under the control of my bad intelligence and I performed sinful activities. That is how living entity repents. That is represented by Puranjan repenting after seeing his wife. So when a person neglects his good intelligence, what happens? Then he becomes bewildered and then he commits sins. That's what Puranjan did, went and performed sinful activities in the forest. So in the last line, the purport is that one certainly becomes addicted to sinful activities when he becomes devoid of his good chaste wife, or when he has lost his good sense and does not take to Krishna consciousness. So this is what, there is a lesson from Vedic culture and lesson in Krishna consciousness. When he becomes, from the point of Vedic culture, he is mentioning that when a person does not have good chaste wife, a person becomes addicted to sinful activities. And the general lesson is that when a person becomes devoid of his good intelligence, then he does not take to Krishna consciousness. Santvayan shlakshna yavacha hridayena viduyata preyasya sneha sambramba lingam atmani nabhyagat.
The king, with a grieved mind, began to speak to his wife with very pleasing words. Although he was filled with regret and tried to pacify her, he could not see any symptom of anger caused by love within the heart of his beloved wife.
So he starts pacifying the wife with sweet words, but he saw that the wife is, although he had neglected her, but his wife was not angry with him. He could not see any symptom of anger caused by love within the heart of his beloved wife. So Prabhupada explains that the symptom of one who comes to Krishna consciousness is that a person regrets his past sins. You'll see in the Ajamil section, Prabhupada says, the duty of a pure devotee is to actually regret his past sinful activities of meat eating, intoxication, illicit sex, like that. So this is the symptom of a person coming to Krishna consciousness. Or in the first canto, Prabhupada explains that all the accidental sins committed by a person are burnt in the fire of repentance. Next verse. Anuninyeta shanakair viro anunaya kovida pasparsha pada yugalam aha chotsanga lalitam.
Because the king was very expert in flattery, he began to pacify his queen very slowly. First he touched her 2 feet, then embraced her nicely, seating her on his lap, and began to speak as follows.
So, Puranjan was expert in flattery, Anunaya Kovidaha. So, he touched her 2 feet and embraced her and made her sit on his lap and began to speak. So, touching her 2 feet represents a devotee touching the lotus feet of the spiritual master. So, that is what it means. Approaching the guru and touching his lotus feet. And then Prabhupada explains that approaching a spiritual master is actually the beginning of surrender. And then he explains that one is like physically touching the feet of the spiritual master. But what is actually the deep significance of touching the feet of the spiritual master? It's a very beautiful point. He says, touching the feet of the spiritual master means giving up one's false prestige and unnecessarily puffed up position in the material world. So that is what it actually means to touch the feet of the spiritual master. And then he says that there are so many scientists and philosophers who are actually atheists and they are so puffed up of their position. So in other words, one cannot arouse Krishna consciousness simply by his own mental speculation. One must surrender to a bona fide spiritual master. So now Puranjan starts speaking. Puranjana uvacha nunam tvakrita punyaste vritya yesh ishvara shubhe kritagas atma sadkritva shiksha dandam na yunjate.
King Puranjan said, "My dear beautiful wife, when a master accepts his servant as his own man, but does not punish him for his offenses, the servant must be considered unfortunate."
So, the 21st to 23rd verse, 21st, like now, from this verse onwards, he starts specifying. The first two verses, he tells that because I neglected you, you have to give me punishment. If a master does not punish the servant who has committed a mistake, then that servant is considered unfortunate. That servant is considered unfortunate. So that means like Puranjan is actually eager to get punished. So Prabhupada explains the mood and the purpose of punishment. The mood of punishment should be to correct a person. The mood of punishment should be done out of love. And the purpose of punishment should be to actually correct a person or bring him to the right point. And also, this purport Prabhupada also sees that how one should see the punishment given by the master. So one should actually see the punishment given by the master as a great fortune. And when a person does not punish, the master does not give punishment, then one should consider, "I am so unfortunate." If you see in the Bali Maharaj episode also, Bali Maharaj, when he speaks to Vamanadev, very beautiful verses he speaks. He says that actually we demigods, we demons are most fortunate, because you actually punish us demons, but demigods, you don't actually punish them. You many times, they are actually always opulent. You actually take away the opulences from us, so therefore we are actually very fortunate. Then he glorifies that, I forget the exact verse, but he says that when the master gives punishment to the, you remember? Yeah, Pumsam Shlagyatamam Manye Dandam Arhatam Arpitam. Yeah, says that. He glorifies that one who actually gets punishment from the master is actually most fortunate. We are so fortunate because you actually punished us demons. Actually, the demigods are unfortunate that you are given the material opulences by which they can actually, they can remain puffed up. But because you have taken away the material opulences, we are so fortunate that we have become completely humbled and we can take shelter of you. Okay. So when a person is punished by the laws of nature, by the will of God, he should not be disturbed. And then Prabhupada quotes Tatyenu Kampam Susamikshamanu, how one should actually see the punishment of the Lord. And then he ends the purport by saying how in the Manu Samhita, the highest punishment, the death punishment given to the murderer, is actually an act of benevolence by the king. When the king is giving death punishment to the murderer, that kind of punishment is actually the it's like the highest act of kindness to that particular person. If you remember, I think the first canto of Prabhupada gives a detailed purport on this.
19 verse, it is written, when he sees his wife, he could not see any symptom of anger caused by the love within the heart of his beloved wife. So what does it mean, Prabhu?
It's like he did not find in her any symptoms of anger. He is repenting, but he is saying that his wife was not, he didn't find any symptoms of anger in her because she loved him, so therefore because of that she was not angry with him so much. That's what is explained. Although he had neglected her, but his wife, out of affection towards the husband, she didn't become angry. So, next verse, 22nd. Paramo anugraho dando brityeshu prabhu narpitaha balona veda tattanvi bandhu krityam amarshanaha.
My dear slender maiden, when a master chastises a servant, the servant should accept this as great mercy. One who becomes angry must be very foolish not to know that such is the duty of his friend.
So here, a servant should consider it actually very fortunate when the master chastises. So Prabhupada explains, he quotes Chanakya Pandit, that the purport he tells that one should never instruct a foolish person. Like if somebody is not ready to actually, in a sense, when a foolish person is instructed nicely, then the foolish person, he becomes more angry. It is like feeding milk to the snake. Milk and banana to the snake, it only increases the poison of the snake. So that means what Prabhupada is trying to say is that if a person feels the punishment to be punishment given by the master, after getting the punishment given by the master, if a person becomes angry, then that means like if he is becoming angry, that means such a person is like a fool. Such a person is like a serpent whose poison has increased. But really a sane person will never see that punishment as the greatest mercy. He will not be like a fool. Next verse. Sattvam mukam sudati sub anuraga bara vrida vilamba vilasat dasita valokam neelala kalibirupaskritamunna samna swanam pradarshaya manasvini valgu vakyam.
My dear wife, your teeth are very beautifully set, and your attractive features make you appear very thoughtful. Kindly give up your anger, be merciful upon me, and please smile upon me with loving attachment. When I see a smile on your beautiful face, and when I see your hair, which is as beautiful as the color blue, and see your raised nose and hear your sweet talk, you will become more beautiful to me, and thus attract me and oblige me. You are my most respected mistress.
So here, he is trying to actually glorify the beauty of his wife, and basically he is trying to attract the mercy of his wife. After, he says, like, having given punishment, you must now give mercy to me. So please speak sweet words or show your beautiful teeth, like that he mentions. So Prabhupada gives both, again, in the purport, he gives a spiritual meaning at the end of the purport, and he also tells a meaning, or he gives a purport based on the storyline. Based on the storyline, he tells that, he talks about the attraction between the man and the woman. He says, an effeminate husband, simply being attracted by the external beauty of his wife, tries to become her most obedient servant. And Shankaracharya says that, one should never, when a person becomes attracted by the beauty of a woman, one should contemplate that this body is nothing but is made of just stool and urine and flesh. And then he tells his famous story of that liquid beauty. I think all of you know that story. Prabhupada quotes that story. How actually that body is made up of flesh, blood, stool, urine and other similar disgusting ingredients. So this is the purport he gives based on the storyline about the how one should not be attracted to the physical beauty of a woman. And then the last paragraph, Prabhupada gives a spiritual meaning of this thing. The spiritual meaning of this is that Puranjan tried to revive her just as a living entity tries to revive his original consciousness. Puranjan is trying to tell her, the wife, that please show your beautiful face, beautiful eyebrows, beautiful teeth. He's trying to revive her original beauty. So it means like living entity should try to revive his original Krishna consciousness, which is very beautiful. Next verse. Tasmin dade damamaham tava vira patni yonyatra busurakulat kritakil bishastam pashyena vita bayamun muditam trilokyam anyatra vai murariporitaratra dasat.
O hero's wife, kindly tell me if someone has offended you. I am prepared to give such a person punishment as long as he does not belong to the Brahmana caste. But for the servant of Murarippu, Krishna, I excuse no one within or beyond these three worlds. No one can be freely move after offending you, for I am prepared to punish him.
So here, here he says that you are lying in this condition. Is it because that somebody has offended you? If somebody had offended you, then I'm ready to give punishment to such a person. Except in the case if that person is a Brahmana or a devotee of Lord Vishnu. Murari por itaratra dasat. Bhu surakulat. Brahmanas are called as Boos, the demigods of heaven, demigods of earthly planet. So except if that person is a Brahmana or a devotee, I am ready to give punishment to anybody who had actually offended you. So here Prabhupada says that Narada Muni is indirectly reminding Prachina Barishad about Prithu Maharaj, who never offended a Brahmana. Who always respected the Brahmanas. That Narada Muni is reminding Prachina Barishad of his forefather Prithu Maharaj, who never chastised a Brahmana or a Vaishnava. In fact, Prithu Maharaj, in his instruction to the citizens, he mentions, Majatu teja prabhavanna mahardibis titikshaya tapasa vidyayacha Dedipyamane jita devatanam kule swayam raja kula dvijanam. So in his instruction he mentions that you should never exercise your power over the Brahmanas who are advanced in transcendental knowledge and renunciation. Ma jatu teja prabhavanna mahardibis titikshaya and tolerance. Titikshaya, tapasa, renunciation, austerities, vidyayacha. You should never actually exercise your power over the Brahmanas. That Prabhupada explains in the purport that Prithu Maharaj, so far he instructed about the importance of practicing devotional service, and now he is telling about how one should remain steady in the practice of devotional service by not offending the devotees or the Brahmanas. So here Narada Muni is reminding Prachina Barishad about his forefather Prithu Maharaj. So Prabhupada in the next purport he talks about the power of Vaishnava Aparad. How Vaishnava Aparad is called as a mad elephant offense. In fact, of course, we're not going into the details. But if you see, the anarthas arise from four sources. Anarthas arise from pious activities, anarthas arise from sinful activities, and anarthas arise from mistakes committed during the performance of devotional service, and fourth is anarthas arise from aparadhas, offenses. And Vishnu Chakravarti explains in Madhurya Kadambini, when all these anarthas are destroyed at which stages? At which stage these anarthas are destroyed completely? He says that the anarthas which arise from pious activity and sinful activity, they are completely eradicated at the stage of asakti with no chance of recurrence. And the anarthas which arise from mistakes committed during the practice of devotional service, they are eradicated completely without any chance of recurrence even at the stage of ruchi itself, even before asakti. But in the case of the anarthas which arise from offenses, especially with respect to Vaishnava aparad, he mentions that even in the stage of bhava, one can feel the results of even the Vaishnava aparad. And he says, even the stage of prema, they are not, they are eradicated completely, but even the stage of prema, although they are eradicated completely, there is a chance of recurrence of those anarthas which arise from Vaishnava aparad. So only when a person meets the Supreme Lord face to face, or when a person goes to the spiritual world, then a person gets complete eradication from the anarthas which arise from Vaishnava aparad with no chance of recurrence. So we can see, that's why the Vaishnava aparad is considered a mad elephant offense, because it takes, in order to get complete eradication, it takes a long time. Then he gives the example of Durvasa Muni. And then he says that the conclusion is that if Krishna consciousness is covered by material sins, one can eliminate the sins simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. But if one pollutes his Krishna consciousness by offending a Brahmana or Vaishnava, one cannot revive it until one properly atones for the sin by pleasing the offended Vaishnava or Brahmana. That is why the sins are called as Duli Lepa, but the offense is called as Vajra Lepa. So Vishnu Chakravartakur, he mentions, he says the spiritual meaning of this is that, what Puranjan is saying is that, if I have faults because of old impressions or committing sin, I will perform charity, vows and pious acts to atone for the faults. But if an obstacle has arisen from the anger of a Brahmana or offense to a Vaishnava, then that is difficult to remove. Except for the offenses to Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, I can make atonement. But the only relief from offending these two is their mercy and nothing else. Says, if you have committed some sins, then we can perform some atonement in the form of giving charity, yajna, dana, tapa, etc. But if you have committed some sins in the form of offending a Brahmana or Vaishnava, the only way to get relief from those sins is that only by pleasing them and getting their mercy. That is the spiritual meaning of this. Next verse. Vaktram nate vitilakam malinam viharsham samramba bhimam avimrishtam apetaragam pashyestanav apishucho pahatau sujatau bimbadaram vigata kunkuma pankaragam.
My dear wife, until this day I have never seen your face without tilak decoration, nor have I seen you so morose and without lustre or affection, nor have I seen you too nice breast wet with tears from your eyes, nor have I ever before seen your lips, which are ordinarily as red as the bimba fruit, without their reddish hue.
So here Puranjan, by seeing the appearance of his wife, who was not properly dressed, who didn't have her, was not properly dressed, whose lips were not properly red, or who didn't have the tilak properly, etc. He's saying that I've never seen you in this condition. So Prabhupada writes brilliant purport. He talks again from cultural point of view and from a spiritual point of view. He says from cultural point of view, a woman looks very beautiful when she has vermilion on her head and when she's decorated with tilaka. And as you know, the famous statement that a charlatan woman, a chaste sweeper woman is actually more beautiful than a charlatan lady on the street. I think Prabhupada mentioned in the first kind. So, if somebody is dressed properly, then like she looks more beautiful than somebody who is like not dressed properly. And a spiritual point of view, Prabhupada writes a brilliant purport here. He says, one may have a sharp intelligence, but sharp intelligence without thoughts of Krishna is of no use. When one's consciousness and intelligence are without any brilliant thoughts about Krishna, they become morose and lusterless. Just like one cannot derive any benefit despite sharp intelligence. Sharp intelligence without thoughts of Krishna is actually lusterless, gives no benefit. Next verse. I'll just complete the next verse and then we'll take up. Tanme prasida suhrudak kritakilbishasya svairam gatasya mrgayam vyasanaturasya kadevaram vashagatam kusumastra vega vistrasta paunsnamushati na bajeta kritye.
Queen, due to my sinful desires, I went to the forest to hunt without asking you. Therefore, I must admit that I have offended you. Nonetheless, thinking of me as your most intimate subordinate, you should still be very much pleased with me. Factually, I am very much bereaved. But being pierced by the arrow of Cupid, I am feeling lusty. But where is the beautiful woman who would give up her lusty husband and refuse to unite with him?
So here again, where Prabhupada in this purport, he mainly talks about gives lesson from the storyline point of view, attraction, the psychology of the man and woman. Vishnu Chakravarti gives a spiritual meaning in his purport. So here Prabhupada says that the basic principle of material existence is the attraction between the man and woman. Yan maitunadi grihamedi sukham hituchyam. He quotes that verse. He says that generally when a woman is attacked by a man, whether her husband or some other man, she enjoys the attack being too lusty. In other words, here he gives the spiritual meaning. When one's intelligence is properly utilized, both the intellect and the intelligent person enjoy one another with great satisfaction. One is, he talks about the psychology of a man and a woman. Both the women actually enjoys the attack, but from a spiritual point of view, he says, when the intelligence is properly utilized, the intelligent person and the intellect both enjoy one another with great satisfaction. So if we see like certain purports, like this purport and like some of the one of the previous purports, it might appear like a little controversial that Prabhupada says that women likes one who is expert at rape. But Jayadvaita Maharaj has given one nice explanation. Was it discussed previously? One Mataji had written a letter about quoting that particular statement. This verbot is also similar to that, but the previous the 25th chapter, that statement comes that women likes a man who is expert at rape. She wrote a letter to Jayadvaita Maharaj, and Jayadvaita Maharaj has written a beautiful reply to that letter. In essence, what Jayadvaita Maharaj says is that, and Prabhupada is saying that women likes a man who is expert at rape, like usually when we consider the word rape, we actually hear in terms of like somebody forcibly trying to actually molest a woman like that. But if you see the history of different words in the English language, the previous century, like the same word had actually different meaning at that time. But now that particular word has a different meaning right now. When Prabhupada, like many of the words, he says that, like for example, the word fruitive, if we see in the present English dictionary, he mentioned that it's not there. But when Prabhupada was writing, like that time, in those dictionaries the word fruity was there. He mentions it. Says that when Prabhupada was writing those purports, the word rape means especially like somebody who abducts or seizes a woman. In the sense that somebody who shows his courage and chivalry and then comes and actually takes away the woman by force. Somebody who shows some kshatriya spirit and takes away the women. And he says, generally the psychology of the women, just talking about the psychological point of view, and they like men who are actually chivalrous and who show like power, who have a kshatriya spirit. Like one devotee, he was sharing a story. He is from a Brahmin family, and he was telling that one of his cousin sister, they were looking for the marriage of the cousin sister, and there was one boy. They looked for one boy, and all the family members felt that this boy is the perfect boy for this particular girl. The horoscope was matching, and that boy is actually working in a very high profile job. He's from IIM Ahmedabad, like highly qualified and very good family and no bad habits and good salary, like that. And they felt this is the perfect match and everything was matching. And then they told the girl to actually speak with the boy alone, and then finally they asked the girl, so do you want to get married? And this girl said, no, I don't want to get married. And everyone was completely shocked. And then they asked, the uncle asked the girl, like, why don't you want to get married? And she said, because this boy is not so ambitious. I'm just telling the story just to tell about the psychology. That in general, the psychology of women is that they like men who are actually ambitious, who are chivalrous. So when we talk about the word rape, it means that they want a man who is chivalrous and who shows kshatriya spirit, not the meaning of the word rape, which in the present context which we see the meaning, that somebody who is forcibly molesting, not that meaning. Because the previous century, the word rape had actually a different meaning. That's how Jayadvaita Maharaj explains in that article. And he gives his experience that he sometimes would visit certain library for certain referring certain books. And in that library, there is a whole section of books which contains certain romantic novels. And all those novels would have a similar theme of men showing their chivalry and then and abducting a woman, like that. And for all those novels, the predominant customers are women. So in that sense, he said, in general, the psychology of women is that they want chivalrous men, and the novels and the movies, they take advantage of the psychology of the women, and that is how, in that way they actually create stories, in that way they create the movies, understanding the psychology of the women. So he says that he does not definitely mean that the word rape means like somebody is forcibly molesting or something. And then he says, we see even the case of Rukmini, how Krishna actually married so many queens by showing his chivalrous forces, like that he mentions. And then he explains, but of course this is the psychology of a woman, but one should know, a woman should know that the supreme husband is Krishna. And how one should develop one's attraction towards Krishna. So that is the explanation which Jayadvaita Maharaj gives. And if somebody wants, I can later share in essence what I read. So in that sense, we should actually understand this purport. And then Prabhupada explains that, he says, very beautiful, the second paragraph, that the actual happiness of the karmi is his sex life. They work very hard outside the home, and to satiate their hard labor, they come home to enjoy sex life. King Puranjan went to the forest to hunt, and after his hard labor, he returned home to enjoy sex life. If a man lives outside the home and spends a week in a city or somewhere else, at the end of the week, he becomes very anxious to return home and enjoy sex with his wife. Like we see, typically all the lorry drivers and all these truck drivers, they are the people who actually visit prostitutes, because they are always traveling. And when a person is actually, his activities are very much in the mode of passion. Like passion, in order to sustain passion, passion means raja. And if a person is doing passion, that means like one will need the inspiration of a rani. So we see typically these are the people who actually enjoy visit prostitutes. So karmis work very hard simply to enjoy sex, and modern human society has improved the materialistic way of life simply by inducing unrestricted sex life in many different ways. And this is most prominently visible in the Western world. So Prabhupada is, in one sense, majority of the purport he gives purport based on the storyline. And of course he mentions spiritual meaning of the purport by saying that when one's intelligence is properly utilized, both the intellect and the intelligent person enjoy one another. So Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in his purport, he says, what Puranjan is mentioning is that this verse describes directly meeting with the dharmic intelligence. So Puranjan is saying, be pleased and reside in my heart. I am uncontrollable, having committed sin by going hunting and killing. Hunting and committing sin are equivalent in meaning according to the dictionary. Hunting and committing sin are equivalent in meaning according to the dictionary. So good intelligence should be situated with him. He expresses this principle by a particular question. So basically what this verse means is that living entity is telling that he is appealing to the good intelligence. Please actually come to me and please give me good intelligence. Please, he is appealing to the good intelligence to be situated in him. That is like the spiritual meaning. So I'll just take a 5 minutes break and then we'll continue the next. can continue. So next chapter. Attack by Chandavega on the city of King Puranjan. The government is supposed to administer the laws of the Supreme Lord. That is the duty of a king. See, one thing is that we have to see from different points of view. In the sense, what Narada Muni is saying, from the point of view of the king, one should not actually punish a Brahmana or a Vaishnava, because Prabhupada explained they do not break any rules normally. But from our point of view, we should not demand that actually. Because Brahmanas, they don't usually demand that. So if we take advantage of that rule and then we demand, oh, you should not punish me, that means we are not actually properly playing that rule. Proper Brahmana was. Yeah, Prabhupada said if it had happened in America, then it would have been a different case actually. Yeah, in this case, Indra had become fallen, but the example he's asking is actually a proper Brahmana but he has committed some mistake, but he is not punished. But from these instances we can see how they're following that culture that somebody who is in dress of a brahmana is committing some wrong things. So they didn't want to, Prithumara's son didn't want to kill him.
Are they totally different, or to some degree, as long as we are living
in this world, we have to show respect to the government laws. Some exceptional cases where one may actually break some rules or something, but as long as we are living, we have to show respect to the government laws. Like when Sanatan Goswami, he had taken a leave saying that he was sick, and then he was just having Bhagavad Katha discussion with the Brahmanas. Then one, after a long time, then the Nawab Hussain Shah came to meet Sanatan Goswami, because he heard that he is not sick, he is actually in good way, healthy condition. So when he came to meet him, so then Sanatan Goswami, as soon as he saw him, he actually got up from his seats. So Prabhupada explains that although this Nawab Hussain Shah was a Malaycha, but still Sanatan Goswami is showing respect to this Malaycha. Because then he quotes that Yadyad Vibhuti Mat Sattvam Srimat Urjitam Evava. When a person, any person who is having any person who is in a great position, who is having some power or splendor, we must know that such a person is having a spark of splendor of the Supreme Lord. So that person should be respected. So Sanatan Goswami, although this person was a Malaycha king, cow killer, but still because he is a king, he is possessing a spark of the splendor of the Lord, he respected him. The same way that the present government or something, it may not be a dharmic government, it may be doing some religious activities, but still we have to show respect because they are actually representing, showing some spark of the splendor of the Supreme Lord.
Initially, we see that Puranjana is looking for a. He has a Kshatriya mentality and he's looking for a Kshatriya kind of intelligence. And it is mentioned that it is a materialistic, dharmic intelligence. And later on, when he goes to the forest, just to clarify my understanding, is it correct that he is taken shelter of a irreligious,
yes,
materialistic intelligence?
Yes.
So both are problematic, so one has to take shelter of
spiritual intelligence. Yes.
Okay.
Because in this Puranjan's life is, we'll see, in this chapter Prabhupada quotes this verse, Dharma Sunishtita Pumsam Vishwaksena Kathasuya. Like Puranjan taking shelter of his wife is, he is taking shelter of a dharmic intelligence. But still, if a person is simply leading the life of Dharma, simply performing his duties, simply a dutiful life is useless. Ultimately, the performance of the duty should come to the development of attraction toward the Supreme Lord. Vishwaksena Kathasuya. So, that is why, as I mentioned, that the Prachina Barishad is a religious king. Although he was making some mistakes during the animal sacrifices, but he was performing the animal sacrifice according to the codes of conduct of the religion. So, from the point of view of, as I mentioned, from Kali Yuga point of view, he was like maybe a saintly king, saintly person. From a pure devotional point of view, simply being religious is not the goal of life. He took shelter of dharmic intelligence, and then he went, going for hunting represents taking shelter of adharmic intelligence, sinful life. But again, him coming and taking shelter of the dharmic intelligence.
And he was doing some social service with that. You know, taking the gold and benefiting the people and giving charity and all. And when Krishna came back to Dwaraka, Krishna knew that Akrura has taken it away. So he called for Akrura back. And then in the public sabha, he asked, where is the
Shyamadaka jewel. So then Akrura comes and gives it back. So the erratic behavior of Akrura, you know, is attributed to his cruelty towards the gopis,
yes,
in taking Krishna away. That's one thing Prabhupada writes. At the same time, Prabhupada also says that because Akrura was a very great devotee also of Krishna, you don't hear Krishna, you know, putting him in the jail or you know, any punishment or anything like that. Because Akrura wouldn't take the gold for himself. Actually, he wanted to benefit the people with that. Vaishnavas, I remember there was one devotee who was given by a donor some 20,000 rupees for some prasadam distribution. So this devotee took it and used it for, you know, getting some Bhagavatam sets for the students. For non-earning students, he gave four sets distributed. So later on, that fellow asked whether prasadam was distributed. He said, yes, great prasad was distributed. The prasad of the mercy of Bhagavatam, you know.
Achha.
So that fellow was very upset. So when this was taken to the temple authorities, of course, temple authorities are upset with this devotee. But they understood that he didn't put it in his pocket. He didn't use it for his selfish purposes. So generally, the nature of Vaishnavas is, even if they do some golmaal, transcendental golmaal also, there also it will be serving Krishna in some other way only. And that is why kings find it difficult to punish them also.
So we'll start this chapter. Narada uvacha ittam puranjanam sadriya vashamaniya vibramai puranjani maharaja reme ramayati patim.
The great sage Narada continued, my dear king, after bewildering her husband in different ways and bringing him under her control, the wife of King Puranjana gave him all satisfaction and enjoyed sex life with him.
So here, how Puran, this chapter gives description how Puranjan again enjoyed life with his wife and then produced so many sons and daughters, that's explained here. And then while enjoying, how he did not actually see the passage of time and being attacked by old age, actually how he leaves his body. That's how this chapter progresses. Although there is a later part of the chapter, old age approaching Narada Muni, that also comes. We'll see that maybe tomorrow. But here we see that Puranjan, the wife of Puranjan gave him all satisfaction and enjoyed sex life with him. So here Prabhupada initially, the first and the second paragraph, Prabhupada gives a summary of like whatever events which have happened. Puranjan going to hunt in the forest and again coming back. The living entity similarly engaged in a material world in sinful activities, and these sinful activities are compared to hunting in the forest. And how to counteract sins? A person should counteract sins by performing yajna, dana and tapasya, etc. And then by coming home, taking his bath, eating nice foodstuffs, getting refreshed and searching out his wife, King Puranjan came to his good consciousness in his family life. In other words, a systematic family life is enjoined in the Vedas, as enjoined in the Vedas, is better than an irresponsible sinful life. Yeah. However, if a husband and wife combine together in Krishna consciousness and live together peacefully, that is very nice. However, if a husband becomes too much attracted by his wife and forgets his duty in life, then the implications of materialistic life will again resume. So then Prabhupada quotes anasaktyasya vishayan. So the right attitude of husband and wife should be, husband should be engaged in devotional service and wife should be faithful to the wife. But when the husband becomes too much attracted to the wife, then the position becomes very dangerous. So we always see, when the wife becomes attached to the husband, that is not actually condemned. In fact, that is actually glorified, because in the sense, wife becomes attached to the husband, then she will get the same destination as husband, that is glorified. When the husband becomes attached to the wife, then that is actually condemned. So you'll see in the Narada Muni also speaks in the 7th canto. When a person enters the grihastha ashram, one should act as if he is attached to the wife, but he should actually internally be detached. So what is he saying? Like, one should enter with the exit plan. He says that one should externally appear as if the wife should feel that he is very much attached to me, but the husband should be internally detached. So in that sense, but in the case of the wife, she should be actually attached to the husband. It's not that she should be internally detached or something. She should be actually attached. But in the case of the husband, he should externally appear as if he is attached, but internally he should be detached. So women in general are very much sexually inclined. Indeed, it is said that a woman's sex desire is 9 times stronger than a man's. It is therefore a man's duty to keep a woman under his control by satisfying her, giving her ornaments, nice food and clothes. So again, when we take this statement, and Prabhupada says, this is actually based on, I think, Chanakya Pandit's this one, women is 9 times more lusty than a man. But we may not see, in one sense, in a practical this one, if we have. But how do we understand this statement? Is that, of course, one way of understanding is that the shyness of a woman is actually protecting them to actually exhibit that lust. But another way of understanding is that in the case, if we see the psychology of a man and woman, in the case of a man, his psychology, his lust is focused only in one direction, in the form of actually getting sexual satisfaction from the women. But in the case of the women, the lust is actually focused in different directions. Getting a comfortable home, getting ornaments, getting a good sari, and getting more and more things and shopping. Like, you see, like, in all the shopping malls, men are just standing only. So women are only purchasing for more. I'm just saying, trying to psychology. So in that sense, like, their lust is actually diverted in different directions. So in that sense, when we say 9 times more lusty, we may not see in terms of like sexual pleasure, but because lust means, we should not see only in terms of lust means it is anything, getting attracted to anything material, it is actually lust. So their lust is focused towards like getting a comfortable home, ornaments, newer and newer saris, and so many things. So that is why Prabhupada is saying, as soon as he makes this statement that women's sex desire is 9 times stronger than a man's, the next statement he says is that therefore a man's duty is to keep a woman under his control by satisfying her, giving her ornaments, nice food and clothes, and engaging her in religious activities. I think one of the 25th chapter, one of the purports Prabhupada says, I couldn't exactly refer to the purport, but Prabhupada mentions a beautiful point. He says, if a man does not satisfy the woman by producing, by giving good ornaments, by good clothes, etc., then his family life will be miserable. But if he does that, the problem is that he may become attached, he may become more entangled. So it is like a catch-22 situation. If you don't do, you'll be miserable. Family life will be miserable. And if you do, you may become attached. So it requires, it's like a, so it is very highly, I think one place Prabhupada explains that one has to be, unless a person is diplomatic, it is very difficult to actually stay in the grihastha ashram. It's like a highly complicated situation in that sense. So, and then of course, a woman should have a few children and in this way not be disturbing to the man. So basically the point is that what Prabhupada is saying is that when the husband becomes too much attracted to the wife, the position becomes very dangerous. So as I mentioned, Prabhupada gave this example in the 3rd canto about that salt. So Vedic literatures, they understand that people require salt. But what they condemn is that when a person takes too much salt, then it will be actually dangerous for them. Okay, you require salt, but you take salt in appropriate quantity. But don't take too much salt. So that's what Prabhupada is saying. And then in the next paragraph, Prabhupada talks about how a beautiful woman is an enemy. Of course, every woman is actually is seen beautiful in the eyes of a man. I think in that that first canto verse or that the Krishna's entrance into Dwaraka, that Nashik, how the queens of Dwaraka could not actually agitate the senses of the Supreme Lord. Uddama Bhava Pishuna Mala Valguhasa Vridava Loka Nihatopi Madanopi Asa Pramodottamasta. Yeah, in that purport also Prabhupada explains that actually whether the sexual attraction is so powerful that whether the other party is beautiful or not, but still a person is attracted. So the same thing Prabhupada is explaining here, that others may see her as not very beautiful, but the husband sees her as beautiful. So then Prabhupada explains that, so therefore he says, again he mentions the next point, the nature of the women is that they are captivated by Rajogun and Tamogun. Or he mentions that the exact point is, forgetting her, if a husband is situated in the mode of goodness and controlled his life, who is in passion and ignorance, the woman is benefited. But the general women are in passion and ignorance in the sense that they are attracted to material objects. So therefore, if the husband is situated in the mode of goodness and engaged in devotional service, then the woman is benefited. But if the husband also becomes attracted to passion and ignorance, then it becomes a dangerous situation. So we can see, that means what should be the responsibility of a person who is actually entering the grihastha ashram, how he should be properly trained in the culture of mode of goodness. So that otherwise the situation will become chaotic. Otherwise the husband coming under the control of the wife sacrifices his quality of goodness and becomes subservient to the qualities of passion and ignorance. In this way the whole situation becomes polluted. So I was hearing a beautiful class of Prahladananda Maharaj. He again gives a beautiful points about the psychology of the man and women. So he says that if we see, he talks about two kinds of intelligence. One kind of intelligence is the spiritual intelligence, that is how to get liberated from the bodily concept. And the other is the material intelligence, that means how to make the material world more comfortable. These are two kinds of intelligence. So women by nature, they want to make the material world more comfortable. It's like they want to have a good comfortable house and good proper facilities, etc. And men by nature, they just want to earn money and get relaxed. They don't need so many comforts in the sense, particular house like that. So women by nature, they are more attached, they want a comfortable life. Spiritual intelligence like how to get out of the bodily concept of life. And material intelligence like how to make the material world more comfortable. So if you see, both the intelligences have a proper role in a family. Like if the women, if they don't act like women, in the sense like if they become detached, then it will not, if they act as if like they are detached, then it will be very bad for the children, because children need to be taken care of properly. They need to be given proper food and clothing and proper comforts. This nature of the women to make this world more comfortable, that helps in taking care of the children. So if they try to act like men, then it will create a chaotic situation in the family life. And if the men act like women, that means like the men become attached to the comforts, if the men become attached to sense gratification, then that will also make the home chaotic. Because when they become attached to sense gratification, where the woman is engaged in the service of the husband, then she will not make progress. The family, the both of them actually, they will not make progress. So therefore, both the intelligences have a proper role. Are you getting this point? So, and then he mentioned that in each of our heart, both the kinds of intelligences are actually operating in both of our hearts. We have actually both these intelligences in every living unit. One part of the intelligence is trying to seek liberation to go out of the bodily concept. Another part of the intelligence is trying to seek comfort in the material world. So, one is the men's intelligence, another is the women's intelligence. So, if you see, another example is that it's like there are two kinds of vehicles. Like one is say the Porsche car, or we can say Volkswagen car. Another is a Maruti 800. So if you try to drive the Maruti 800 like a Volkswagen car, then you will actually meet with an accident. So basically the point is that if the women try to act like men, then definitely it will result in a chaotic situation in a family. So it should be so one has to drive the vehicle according to its specifications. So in that sense, when both of them play the roles, so then it will be beneficial for the family. So that is the point he mentioned in relation to this. Like for example, if the man is too interested in sense gratification, or the woman becomes too detached, in the sense that if the woman does not cook or keep the house clean, etc., then it will be chaotic. The family life will become miserable. So therefore, both of them, although the women by nature, they have material intelligence, they are more seeking comfortable situation in this material world, but when they are serving the man who is situated properly in goodness, who is engaged in devotional service, then both of them advance together by the system of the family. So that is what Prabhupada is actually trying to make this point through this purport. And then the final conclusion Prabhupada explains that the conclusion is that the household life is better than a sinful life devoid of responsibility. But if in the household life the husband becomes subordinate to the wife, involvement in materialistic life again becomes prominent. And in this way, a man's material bondage becomes enhanced. And because of this, after a certain age, a man is recommended to abandon his family life for the stages of vanaprastha and sannyas. So next verse. Sa raja mahishim rajan susnatam ruchirananam kritasvastyayanam triptam abhyanandat upagatam.
Took her bath and dressed herself nicely with all auspicious garments and ornaments. After taking food and becoming completely satisfied, she returned to the king. On seeing her beautifully decorated, attractive face, the king welcomed her with all devotion.
So again, so the queen actually welcomed her welcomed Puranjan with a beautiful, attractive face. The king welcomed her with all devotion. So again, Prabhupada talks about it is the duty of the wife to dress herself up very nicely so that when her husband returns home, he becomes attracted by her dress and cleanliness and thus becomes satisfied. In other words, the wife is the inspiration of all good intelligence. So one, I forget this Maharaj's name, Satswarup Maharaj's disciple. So he mentions a beautiful point in this connection. He said, it's like, again, if you see from the point of view, the role of a woman, women is just supposed to keep the house clean and make a proper atmosphere so that when the husband comes, he finds the atmosphere very pleasurable. But the modern concept is that women also should act like men. They should also go for work and they do not actually perform these household duties like that. But he was telling his own experience in book distribution. So this devotee, now he is a Maharaj, but previously when he was actually doing book distribution, so some devotees would go for book distribution outside and his service was to actually cook for the devotees so that when the devotees come back, so they can actually give nice prasadam to the devotees who are all along outside throughout the day. So then this devotee, he was always feeling, because all these devotees were sharing so many stories of book distribution, and he went to his leader, "Oh, I am not able to distribute books. I am feeling morose that all these have so many stories that I am not able to distribute any books." So then this leader told him, "Your book distribution is by cooking for the devotees who are engaged in book distribution. Although you are not distributing books, you are just cooking, staying at the center and cooking and just maybe taking care of the accounts or something. You are not in the forefront, but you are also actually equally doing book distribution like them." So you are saying this point, how although the women are actually they're just taking care of the house, but by serving the person who is engaged in earning money, by engaging in the activities of dharma and devotional service, she is also making the same progress. Just like in a train, whether the 18th bogie which is connected to the engine, it goes to the same speed as the engine. It is not that when the train reaches the destination, the passengers in the 18th bogie, they get down later. No, all the passengers actually get down immediately. So, similarly, yeah, another point, more thing I wanted to mention. Yeah, so Dayamrit Maharaj, he was telling a beautiful story. He was saying, I think one of his friend or someone, he studied in Oxford University. And so then he got, his friend had attraction towards another girl from the same university, and then they got married. But after marriage, the wife put a condition. She said, "I also studied from the Oxford University, so I will also work." And then she said, "We can have children only after so many years." She put a condition. And then she said, "And since I am also working, that whoever comes first from the office, only that person should cook. It's not that I will be cooking all the time." So then Dayamrit Maharaj, his friend was narrating the story to him. Actually, what Dayamrit Maharaj, when he met his friend, he was telling that how the purpose of human life is not simply eating, mating, sleeping and defending. If you are only doing these four activities properly, then we are actually nothing but two-legged animals. So when he told this, then his friend started narrating his story, how he got married to this girl. And this girl, after marriage, she has put this condition. And because she put this condition, so both of us did not want to cook. So both of us would come from the office as late as possible. just to avoid cooking. And when they would come late, and then when they would come so late, just to avoid cooking, then they would decide, now anyway so late, we cannot cook. Anyway, let us go to the restaurant and eat. So they would lead, every day practically they would end up eating in restaurant late in the night. And because of that, they would sleep late. So he said, you are talking about if the human beings are engaged only in eating, mating, sleeping and defending, that worse than, they're nothing but two-legged animals. But actually in our life, we are not able to perform even eating, mating, sleeping and defending properly. We have become worse than the animals. Because we come so late from the office, we are not able to cook at home. We end up eating in the restaurant. Restaurant food is, we are bored with the restaurant food. We are not able to eat properly. And because we sleep so late in the night, our sleeping is disturbed. And there is no question of mating because the wife has put the condition. So he said that, like, I said, it is not even actually human, animal life. It has gone beyond the beyond the animal. So that is like a nonsense, the condition. So I'll just take the next verse and then we'll end the class. Tasyopaguda parirabda kandaro rahonu mantrairapakrishta chetana nakalaramho bubude duratyayam diva nisheti pramada parigraha.
Queen Purinjani embraced the king, and the king also responded by embracing her shoulders. In this way, in a solitary place, they enjoyed joking words. Thus King Puranjan became very much captivated by his beautiful wife and deviated from his good sense. He forgot that the passing of the days and nights meant that his span of life was being reduced without profit.
So here, you see, the word pramada, diva nisheti pramada parigraha. So pramada actually means women. And parigraha means King Puranjan being captivated by this woman, by her joking words, and he forgot how the days were passing. So Prabhupada explains, pramada means enlivening as well as maddening. That means a beautiful and a chaste wife can enliven the husband, at the same time she can also madden the husband by making him attached towards her. So generally a householder does not take the passing of days and nights very seriously. And this, when a person does not actually realize the passing of days and nights, this condition is called as apakrita, apakrishta chetanaha. It means degraded consciousness. Then Prabhupada explains that the greatest loss in life is basically passing time without understanding Krishna. See, every moment of our life should be utilized properly, and the proper use of life is to increase devotional service to the Lord. And without devotional service to the Lord, the activities of life become simply a waste of time. So this is the purport I mentioned. So simply by becoming dutiful, we do not make any profit in life. As confirmed in the Srimad Bhagavatam, so Puranjan's wife represents dharmic intelligence. So if we see from one point of view, the meaning is that Puranjan became attached to his dharmic intelligence, or the living entity becomes attached to his dharmic intelligence. So when a living entity becomes attached to his dharmic intelligence, then he leads a dharmic way of life, but he thinks that performing the dharmic way of life is the ultimate goal. He simply, oh, I am performing all my duties, so what is wrong? In otherwise, it is like work is worship. But simply leading a dharmic life is not the ultimate goal. That is why he quotes this verse, Dharma Sunishtita Pumsam Vishvaksena Katasuya. So I'll stop here. We'll continue from tomorrow. Tomorrow we'll go fast, actually. We'll want to complete this chapter and go to the next chapter also. Grantara Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Shila Prabhupada ki jai, Gaura Bhakta Vrinda ki jai.